Joshua chapter 12 through 22. And if you looked at it, you know why. There's so much to 11 chapters to cover. In chapter 12, it just gives a roster of the kings. You can see all of the ones that were conquered in Joshua's under Joshua's leadership. In chapter 13, it says Joshua was old and stricken in years. What does that mean? It means that the age was catching up. He was stricken with years. And there remaineth yet very much land to be possessed. The Lord said unto him, thou art old and stricken in years, and there remaineth yet very much land to be possessed. And, you know, it reminds me of the little cartoon, and it says, you know, God has assigned so much for us to accomplish, and at this rate, I'm never going to die. You know, and there's a lot to be done, and it seems like there's always something that we could be doing, always something else we could be doing, and we have to prioritize. And sometimes it seems like things get put on the back burner and they keep getting pushed back. You know, my calendar, every day I pull it up, and sometimes I just have to look at it and say, well, I can't do that today, and push it to tomorrow or next week or whenever it is. And we have to prioritize. But he had very much left to do. There was still a purpose, and that's what's important. It's important for us to have a purpose in our lives, something that needs to be done, some goals. You know, if we don't have some kind of goal, and whether that's a spiritual goal, something in the church, or whether that's a charitable organization or physical goals, we got to have some goals, or with our families, some kind of goal, something we that keeps us going, that keeps us alive, that makes us get out of bed every morning. And verse number 6, it says, all the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon to Misrephoth-Maim, you think you could do better? And all the Sidonians, them will I drive out from before the children of Israel. Only divide thou it by lot unto the Israelites for an inheritance. Now therefore, divide this land. There's very much land to be possessed. We look at the nation of Israel, and most of the time we, in our understanding, we say, you know, from Dan to Beersheba. Of course, we can see that this actually goes a little bit further south than that. We know because of the 2.5 tribes that stayed on the east side of Jordan that it extended beyond the Jordan River, which we normally don't think about that as being Israel, but it's a great big mass of land. And with all that they've accomplished, God says, you've still got more to do. There are still other people living in that land. And God says, you've got to possess it. You've got to take it. And so the first thing to do is divide it up. You've got to decide who's going to go where, so that once you get the people out of it, you can occupy it. You can take over. And verse number 12, it says, all the kingdom of Og and Bashan, which reigned in Ashtaroth and in Edrei, who remained of the remnant of the giants. Chapter 13, verse 12, the remnant of the giants, for these did Moses smite and cast them out. Are there giants among us today? Physical giants. Shaquille O'Neal? Y'all familiar with him? That's a giant. There are some people who are very tall. Now, of course, we're talking about Goliath, you know, 10 feet tall, and his brothers. And so do we know anybody that's 10 feet tall? Well, they are from time to time. We see a document or record of people that are that tall. But these were not only that tall, but they had the strength to go along with it. It was proportional. And so these giants were among them, but it says there remained a remnant of the giants. Now, we're in the book of Joshua, right? Where do we come across Goliath? What book is that? Okay, Samuel. So When you look at the time, we see that there will still be giants down the road. And this is the region. So there are going to be some giants left over in that region and born in that region. So they're not going to be completely eliminated. But it's just important that we establish that there were, you know, literal giants. Verse 14, only unto the tribe of Levi he gave none inheritance. The sacrifices of the Lord of Israel made by fire are their inheritance. So they get little cities, little suburbs, little places where they could keep their stuff. But as far as, but they were part of the suburbs of other tribes. It wasn't theirs. The Levites didn't have their own. And then when it comes to the temple and the offerings that come from the temple, see, the Levites didn't have farmland, as you would say, because they weren't supposed to be growing their food. They were supposed to be receiving it from the people. And so that's why he says the Levites did not gain an inheritance. Chapter 14, verse 6, the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, thou knowest the thing the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord. And, you know, he's able to say that, and everybody knows that's true. He did what was in his heart, and he followed God. God says, spy out the land, come back, give a report. Remember where one of the last places was that they went? Where the giants were. And you know, they might have had a lot of courage going through the land until they got to that place, and when they saw those giants, they said, never mind, we're done, let's just give up. But Caleb didn't give up. Verse 9, Moses swear on that day, saying, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. What is Caleb's objective? I know if you studied it, and we're about to read those verses, but what is his objective? What's he thinking about? His inheritance? Why? The future. His family, the future. You know, he's 85 years old. And so it's not as important to Caleb that he gains his inheritance, that he gets his assignment, but it's important for his future, for the family, for his children and grandchildren. And we have to think beyond ourselves. And so he says in verse number 11, as yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. How many of you would say you expect to be as strong at 85 as you were at 40? That'd be great, wouldn't it? But that's where Caleb is. And remember, you know, his lifestyle really demanded that, you know, the way they lived. So in those days, in that situation, Caleb said, look, I could do it now. And I know, I was talking to one of the brothers the other day, and he said, you know, I like to think in my mind I'm as strong now as I was when I was 40. But then I start to do something and realize pretty quickly I'm not. But Caleb says, I'm still as strong. I could go to battle. I could go out, come in, do whatever I need to do. Now, therefore, verse 12, give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day, For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. See, as they came to the end of their days as spies, they came to that place where those giants were, and of course the hearts of the spies melted except for Joshua and Caleb. And Caleb still has in his mind, you know why? Because they've accomplished a lot, all these little places. But Caleb says, nobody's conquered that yet. I want that. I want that land. And if it's fit for a giant, you know, the fence around the city and the houses, right? You talk about high ceilings. Of course, they had high ceilings in those houses. So, you know, that was what he liked, and he wanted it. He says, and if it's God's will, if so be the Lord will be with me, I shall be able. That's not a problem. He still has the same heart at 85 that he did at 40, is we could trust God. And that's after 40 years of wandering through the wilderness because his companions didn't believe God. And so he's had to suffer for 40 years and endure for 45 years now because some other people didn't believe God. And when other people don't believe God, we all suffer. We have to know that. I mean, look at the world around us. Don't you think we'd be better off if everybody would trust Christ and everybody would follow God and everybody would live by the word of God? Yeah, we'd all be better off. And so he has faith. Verse 13, Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. And so he said, okay, it's yours. You want it? It's yours. That's easy, isn't it? Joshua says, you can have it. But now what's left to do? Got to go get it. Right? Which is what happened when they left Egypt. He said, it's yours. But they still had to go get it. And we go through chapter 15. We see how the land is divided. And then chapter 16, verse 10, they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day and serve under tribute. And remember, we talked about that last week, how they that group had tricked Joshua into having a league or a treaty with them, and then they became servants of Israel. And so it says here, the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer paid tribute. Chapter 17, verse 12, it says, the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. So, do you have a problem with that? I have a problem with that. Because God said the land is yours. So what happened? Why would the Bible say they could not drive them out? Verse 13. Yet it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxing strong, they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. Right? They found a compromise. Again, well, we'll just tax them. And instead of driving them out, the children of Manasseh could not drive them out. But it was not a matter of one people to drive out the inhabitants. Remember, the agreement was everyone would cross over and everyone would clean out the land and open it up for Israel. And only after everyone had fought on everyone else's behalf could they go back and occupy their own land. Chapter 18. See, now 11 chapters doesn't seem so bad, does it, the way we're flying through this? Chapter 18, verse 1. The whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered together at Shiloh. They set up the tabernacle of the congregation there, and the land was subdued before them. So as we go back and we look at all these chapters that we didn't just read through, it labels all the kings and all the cities and every village that's been conquered. And now it says they set up the tabernacle. And of course, when they set up the tabernacle, they start worshiping. and they have celebration and festivities, and the land was subdued. They have conquered. Verse 2, and there remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, how long are you slack to go possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers hath given you? Why, they were satisfied to dwell with their brethren. But they needed to have their own identity as a tribe, as a people. And Joshua says, y'all got to stop crowding up against everybody else. You know, the Bible actually teaches against big cities. The Bible teaches that we should be spread out and have space, have room, and not live right on top of each other. But as we look at this here, we see that these seven tribes have just not, they're just not motivated to do it. And they're satisfied to live with their brothers, with the rest of the people. And so he says, how long are you slack to go possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers has given you? Verse 4, give out from among you three men for each tribe. So how many is that? Seven tribes that have not done it. Three from each of those seven tribes. And I will send them and go through the land and describe it according to the... So what do we call this? Verse 4. What would we call these people? Surveyors. Surveyors. And like Davy Crockett, right? So they're surveyors. They go out there and they describe the land, and they come back and they report the land and how it's all measured out. And then they divide it into seven parts. And they say, this is going to be yours. This will be yours. This will be yours. Now, go get it. And that's how it worked. But up until that point, these people just weren't motivated. Why? Because there was plenty of room in the rest of the country. But it was important for them to have their own identity. Verse 8, the men arose, went away. Joshua charged them that went to describe the land, saying, go walk through the land and describe it and come again to me, that I may hear, cast lots for you before the Lord in Shiloh. Verse 10, Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord, and there Joshua divided the land to the children of Israel according to their divisions. So with a map, just had it all drawn out and divided into seven parts, and then trusting that God would guide, they cast lots and divided it and assigned it to each person. Verse 51 of chapter 19. The last part of that, so they made an end of dividing the country. So we go back, and it says there's very much land to be possessed. And then we go to, you need to go get yours. Why are you slack? Go take your inheritance. And now we come to verse 51, and they made an end of dividing it. It's all been divided out. And verse 20, we talk about the cities of refuge. And verse number 3, the slayer that killeth any person unawares or unwittingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood. Verse 6, he shall dwell in that city until he stand before the congregation for judgment, and until the death of the high priest that shall be in those days. And so they appointed the cities. In verse 7, it lists those cities. And verse 8, it lists more cities. And so they were given a place where they could go for refuge, a city of refuge, if they did something that would bring execution, but they would be able to go there to get what? A fair trial. Those seven cities, the fair trial. Chapter 21, and y'all can stop me if I'm going too fast. Chapter 21, verse 44, the Lord gave them rest round about, according to all that he sware to their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. So at this point, they have possessed the land. They have designated the inheritance or the divisions of the land and leadership of the land. And now they have rest. There's no one contesting their ownership of the land. It'd be great if we were back there, wouldn't it? Because now they're fighting over the land, you know, and particularly over Jerusalem, but not only Jerusalem, fighting for the land. Verse 45, there failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. So we go back 45 years, and they're in Egypt, and they're slaves, and they're miserable, and they're crying out, and God hears their voice, and God has to do what? He has to raise up a leader, and, you know, and that's a process. How long did that process take? To raise up a leader. 40 years. So Moses is born, and then at the age of 40, of course, we know he identifies with the children of Israel. God calls him into ministry of leadership, and he goes and he starts working, spends 40 years learning the land, and then he spends the last 40 years leading Israel. So really it took 80 years, didn't it? A long time. But 40 years to raise him up to identify with the children of Israel. So sometimes it seems like God's not working on it, but he had a plan, didn't he? And when we look at our lives, sometimes we can't see God's hand at work, but we know he's working on it. But he works over time. It's not always the miracle turnaround, the pivot that we're looking for. We want God to fix it today. But Moses was born, and now all these years later, he finally leads out. And now that final 40 years, he's the leader of those people. So really, you could say it took 80 years. How many of you need a solution before 80 years? But God's working, right? God's at work, and he's bringing things around. But it says all came to pass. All right. In chapter 22, verses 1 through 6, we see how Joshua released the people back to the other side of Jordan. In verse 2, ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice and all that I commanded you. Ye have not left your brethren these many days unto this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment. Verse 5, but take diligent heed to the commandment of the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, to cleave to him, to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. That's it. And by the way, sent them away with, you know, sufficient treasures that they could do well for the future. Verse 10, chapter 22. And when they came to the borders of Jordan that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh, built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. So they erected this thing right there. It can be seen from, you know, from the east side and from the west side. And people took notice of it. Verse 11, the children of Israel heard say, behold, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh, have built an altar over against the land of Canaan in the borders of Jordan at the passage of the children of Israel. And when the children of Israel heard it, the whole congregation of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go up to war against them. Can you remind me what just happened here? 2.5 tribes of Israel have committed themselves, devoted themselves for many years to serve alongside, to conquer land that they weren't going to live on. And now the battle is over. They have peace. They take their treasures and they go back across Jordan. But when they get back across Jordan, they build an altar. The last thing Joshua said to them is, be true to God. And now they build an altar on the other side. There's one in Shiloh. The tabernacle's in Shiloh. They built one on this side of Jordan. And you know what nobody did? Nobody asked them what it meant. They just started talking about it. Have you seen what they did over there? Go look at it. People go over there and look at it. And then it builds up and travels through. Now, how many people live close to that? Not a bunch. Right? But it spreads all throughout the nation of Israel. So that, look at what it says. All the congregation of the children of Israel came to Shiloh. It wasn't to worship. It wasn't for a feast or for a sacrifice. It was because that was where the leadership was. And they said, we need to go to battle against them. We need to go to war against our brothers. And Joshua said, well, come on. That's an awful thing. And if they've done that, then God will punish us for what they've done. But let's not just assume that's what it is. Let us gather a council of leaders, of elders, and let's go over there and ask them what it's about, but caution them that if this is an altar to make sacrifices to another god, to a Canaanite god, then God will not only punish them, but God will punish us. And we don't want to get punished, so we will punish them too. And we will go to battle. Look at verse 18. You must turn away this day from following the Lord, and it will be, seeing you rebel today against the Lord, that tomorrow he will be wroth with the whole congregation of Israel. Must it be that you turn away from God? And when he says tomorrow, he doesn't mean the day after today. He means down the road, in the future. And he reminds them of some things that happened, of course, with Achan and Ai. And so they question him. And the children of Reuben, of Gad and Manasseh respond in verse 26. Therefore we said, let us now prepare to build us an altar, not for burnt offering nor for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between us and you and our generations after us, that we might do service of the Lord before him with our burnt offerings and with our sacrifices, and with our peace offerings, that your children may not say to our children in time to come, you have no part in the Lord. He said, guys, this is about teaching our children that we are one nation. And this is about teaching your children that we are one nation, that we're all one people. And so we've built this because we're looking down the road and we don't want to be separated. And why was that necessary? Simple explanation, not real spiritual. People forget. There was a natural divider. And that the Jordan River divided one group from the other group. And it wouldn't be hard to imagine that they would reach a point where they say, well, they're not us. There's that natural divider, natural border. And so they say, we better make some plans, better figure something out. Verse 28, therefore said we, it shall be when they should say to us or to our generations in time to come, that we may say again, behold the pattern of the altar which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings, nor for sacrifices, but it is a witness between us and you. Verse 29, God forbid that we should rebel against the Lord and turn this day from following the Lord to build an altar for burnt offerings, meat offerings, sacrifices, beside the altar of the Lord for sacrifice, beside the altar of the Lord, our God, that is before the tabernacle. He says, look, we get it. There's one place that there should be an altar. There should be one house of worship. And we should all go to that one place before God. God's tabernacle, not ours, God's. He built that. He designed that. He instructed that to be put together. And the high priest said, okay, sounds good. But you see how close they were to killing their own people? Over a misunderstanding. Over an assumption. And all they had to do was ask the question. It's so frustrating when people make assumptions and don't ask the question. But we see how dangerous it is that it could actually lead to war against our own people. Comments, questions, criticisms, complaints. All right, let's take a break.